Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Hands Across the Bridge is an annual event where people join hands and celebrate their recovery on the I-5 bridge that spans Oregon and Washington. Drug recriminalization went into effect on September 1st in Oregon. I spoke with people at the annual celebration about addiction, recovery, and deflection, a new program that offers pathways to treatment.
I'm Nicole Fullman.
And what are your thoughts about deflection or House Bill 4002 that went into effect September 1st here in Oregon that recriminalized certain drugs?
Well, I think that they probably could have gone about it in a different way. I don't think that it's going to serve the purpose of getting people off the streets and into a recovery program. I think that how they set it up, if you mess up one time, then you go to jail. I think that it should be structured in a different way so that there's more chance for success.
And what would that look like?
Meeting people where they're at, getting them into housing. And I think we really need more detox centers, and so that they can actually have a chance. I think that waiting and coming back the next day is not good. No one's going to wait and come back the next day. I think that we should have treatment centers more easily available that you can get to right now.
You said meet them where they're at. What would that look like?
Actually going out and, you know, like maybe having a program to where you can go out and talk to them on the streets, like a bicycle crew, bring resources with you on spot, ask them if anybody wants to go to treatment. And I have done some research myself, and believe it or not, people have said that if they were offered that choice, that they would have taken it. They just don't know how to go about getting clean.
And are you in your recovery yourself?
Yes, I am.
And what worked for you in your recovery?
Good question. Everybody has their own avenue. There's no one right way. And mine was faith. I did not go to treatment. I quit cold turkey. Actually, I had a spiritual way of quitting. An ex called me and said, you know, you have to be clean and sober by January 1st or you're not going to have this great future. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then my mom's husband woke up from a nap and he goes, hey, Nicole, do you know that I had this really crazy dream? You have to be clean and sober by January 1st or you're not going to have this great destiny. I'm like, no way. And then December rolls around and I'm walking down the street and I hear it like stereo to myself. So three times I knew that was it. I quit January 1st. So that was it.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Robert Sanders, and I'm with 4D Recovery. I serve as the Director of Adolescent Services. And so over the last 4 to 5 years, if you look at the conditions within Portland, I think it's pretty obvious what we were doing was struggling. And so I'm excited to see, you know, some avenues for external motivation that maybe can push people into the recovery process for them. I think that this approach has an opportunity to meet people where they're at and give them another option other than jails, but also incentivizes their participation in treatment.
Do you think there's enough outreach for our youth who are dying from unintentional overdoses of fentanyl at alarming rates?
No. So they did a gaps analysis, OHSU did, and less than 1% of 1% of what we spent on substance use care in the state of Oregon goes to primary prevention. And if you look at the state of conditions for youth, there's no detox beds. There's no recovery community organizations other than 4D Recovery, the one. We have two recovery high schools, but there isn't a system of care for youth, for kids. And I think Oregon needs to do better. So at the 4D Recovery Adolescent Center, we serve 14 to 17-year-olds. Our young adult program serves 18 to 35.
So what more could be done besides deflection? What else can be done for 14 to 17-year-olds?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts in the school system. I think if we looked at behavioral problems that were occurring there and got people connected to resources, mental health, substance use, I think that would be a good place to start. I think if we built community programs so kids could be a part of a team or a club or some kind of activity, maybe that would prevent it or delay the onset of use to begin with. And I also think we need more recovery community organizations where our youth can turn if they have developed a problem and start to work on their recovery pathway and their identity moving forward. So I just think it's going to take, you know, us as adults rising up to the responsibility that we have to really take care of our kids and prioritizing their care. And what I've heard when I'm going down to Salem and trying to talk to people is that, oh, this belongs to the Department of Education, or this belongs to the Oregon Health Authority. And for me personally, I don't really care who it belongs to anymore. I just want to see the state finally prioritize our kids.
Do you think recriminalizing certain drugs here in Oregon, will that work?
I think that the current approach hasn't worked, and I think we need to be open to the idea that sometimes we need some external motivation that doesn't feel comfortable to push us into the recovery process.
What led you to your recovery?
Yeah, so, you know, I had a very supportive family that wanted to see me get it for a long time, and they didn't stop believing in me. But I also had a probation officer that was following me around, and I had a warrant that if I didn't check into treatment, he was going to end up putting me back in Clackamas County Jail. And so those two things kind of came together, and it pushed me to seek help at DePaul Treatment Centers at the time, now Fora Health. But I definitely needed somebody else on the outside to challenge me. So at 4D, we use a goal-oriented approach. So if I'm working with a participant, I'm going to ask them, hey, what are three things that you want to accomplish? And we're going to go ahead and we're going to throw those three things up onto a whiteboard, and we're going to start marking down the resources or the assets that you have already at hand to accomplish those goals. And from there, we're going to be able to determine what you need to get connected to, what already exists, and we're going to start, you know, making steps to ensure that those goals are attainable and that you can keep dreaming.
My name is Mabel Clark, and we are with Crystal Meth Anonymous. We are actually the only Crystal Meth meetings in Clark County. We have three of them now, Monday, Tuesday, Saturdays. I'm going to be celebrating 21 months clean and sober on September 5th. I personally have had addiction for 42 years, since I've been 10 years old, and I stuck a needle in my arm for methamphetamine for 36 years.
What worked in recovery for you?
I've been in 9 inpatient treatment centers, and it still wasn't enough. My boyfriend passed away from an asthma attack. He was a normal guy. In fact, he was an officer, and he just died from asthma one day. But it still wasn't enough. My kids told me they were done with me. They were not going to walk around the pink elephant anymore, and they were going to love me from afar. So by my 25-year-old telling me that, and then the 18-year-old took me out to lunch, said, you know, I'm 18 now, and I've gone to bed for 18 years, terrified to get a phone call that you've either overdosed or you've been killed by a trick. And it woke me up. It brought light to my eyes. And I surrender to my God and my understanding, so I get on my knees every single night. And I thank God for letting me get through another day clean and sober. And I tell him, I want to do your will, not my will. And I surrender everything I have to you. And I get up in the morning and I get on my knees again and thank him for letting me open my eyes on this earth and take my breath to have another day just to make things right.
What would have worked early on, decades ago, for you to help get off drugs and get in recovery?
Honestly, I'm not sure anything would have. Like I said, I've been in and out of treatment centers since 1992. I'm 53 years old. I've been to 9 of them, and it still never was enough until I lost something that was super precious to me. It didn't wake me up, I guess you could say. And until my kids were completely done, and they told me, look, we are brutally honest, we're going to tell you we're done. Until they did that for me, I wasn't ready to surrender, because meth and other addiction and alcoholism have been such a prevalent part of my life, all my life, since I've been 10 years old. That's all I've ever known, how to deal with life on life's terms. And so now I'm also a secretary of the Lighthouse. I'm a member of the Recovery Cafe. I'm a member of the Hands Across the Bridge Committee. I do nothing but recovery. And I also take my crystal meth panel into the men's inpatient lifeline. And I was in that lifeline also when it was co-ed. We take our crystal meth panel in every second and fourth Friday of the month to the men's inpatient. We take our crystal meth panel into the women's lifeline every second and fourth Sunday of the month. So between all those things that I do, me giving back to the community and helping another suffering alcoholic or addict to tell them, you don't have to be alone. You don't have to wake up, you know, hopeless, helpless, shattered and broken like I have for so many years, and that we will love you until you're able to love yourself. That's what changed for me. So that's why I do what I do. I get to show my kids, I could be a good mom, and I could be a good person in the community, you know what I mean? And everybody knows me in recovery. So I'm just so thankful and grateful for that.
Yeah, I'm Cassara Kennedy, and I'm a peer mentor, and I feel like Oregon holds a little bit of responsibility from decriminalizing and getting people the opportunity to become addicted in the first place. And my only concern about the recriminalization, I understand that they have the deflection, but is there going to be enough beds to offer to these people? And then coming out of jail or prison, do we have the services available to catch these people afterwards to make sure that they get the services that they need to stay recovered?
And what part of the state do you provide peer services to?
Out of Pendleton, Oregon. It's a couple, are we south? 2 hours, 2.5 hours south of here, maybe?
And what are some of the issues in Pendleton, Oregon?
We deal with a lot of methamphetamine. We're starting to see a little bit more fentanyl in our area, but I don't think that it's nearly as bad as it is here in Portland. But because it's a smaller area, we have more beds available for the people that do want them. However, accessing services in a rural area is a little bit more difficult, and you have less options to choose from as far as if you don't get along with a therapist, or if you, you know, for certain reasons don't qualify for their services, you don't have a whole lot of options.
Deflection is going to provide treatment or jail. What more can be done for people before they reach that point?
Yeah, I think that we need to start with more family services. I think if you catch people upstream before their parents, before, you know, they live in a household with crime and addiction, then you end up preventing that child and so on and so forth. You have to catch it earlier in the system before. I don't know that there's a whole lot that we can do at this point as far as, like, I mean, you can open up more beds, offer more services for people with less insurance coverage, more funding for sure. But outside of that, I think we just have to help, you know, the pregnant mothers, help the fathers that are maybe struggling to make ends meet, and they're before they don't commit the crime in the first place.
Mary Simpson, I think that they need to work on more of the mental health, more of your cognitive thinking, self-esteem, self-worth, and work with people before they get to the point of jail. I believe, because I've been through the system, that had I been addressed that I had domestic violence and trauma, I wouldn't have been put in the system. They could have helped me from that point. You know, therapy. I believe big time in therapy.
My name is Tammy Wilkins. I'm here at Hands Across the Bridge 2024. We're currently in the second half of the event where we're doing Hands Fest over in the Esther Short Park on the Vancouver side, and I'm just really happy to be here.
And what is Hands Across the Bridge?
Hands Across the Bridge is a Recovery Month celebration where we bring communities, families, and community members together so that we can celebrate recovery and bring everybody together to enjoy the life that they have earned so diligently to have through recovery.
And it's every year on Labor Day, and today it is pouring, and there is a huge crowd that joined hands across the I-5 bridge from Oregon to Washington. So how many people do you think are here today? How many people showed up?
You know, I really don't have a count, but I was down on the Oregon side watching the people join across the bridge, and we had plenty of people to come together and do the serenity prayer on the bridge and just celebrate together. So I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure somebody does that has been counting.
And Tammy, September 1st, the new recriminalization law went into effect here in Oregon, recriminalizing drugs, certain drugs, after Oregonians decriminalized them through Measure 110 in 2020. What are your thoughts about this new deflection program that is going to offer people jail or treatment?
Very simplified version of what they're going to offer. I do know that we've been working on legislation in Oregon under Measure 110 for quite some time now, trying to avoid the recriminalization of personal use amounts of narcotics, because that in and of itself is criminalizing addiction as opposed to a public safety issue. So there's a lot going on. Every county is going to be doing it differently. And we as providers, because I work at an agency where we do peer support specialists, we as providers just want to make sure that people still have the access to the services that Measure 110 intended them to have, which is recovery resources and recovery housing and support in accessing different agencies or services that they need to do the very hard work to change their lives. So recrim is a disappointment for all of us that have worked so diligently and hard on Measure 110, but we are not letting go of the vision of what Measure 110 was intended, and we are staying at the forefront of the deflection conversation so that we can stay at the table. The providers can be at the table, the services can be at the table, And we can still continue to help people like we need to and like we intended to when we passed this measure in 2020.
What are the issues with deflection?
Well, as I see it, it is very law enforcement heavy in the conversations and the organizing of what the deflection will look like. Many of the suggestions or the platforms they're trying to use to stand up deflection are very reminiscent of previous stop court or diversion programs, things that, you know, that we have shown that they have their benefits, but they do not work for what we're doing. So, and the short amount of time that they gave themselves to stand up, right? We've only had just a few months. So they're using a lot of existing structures like community court or other court type processes that have been proven in the past to affect the marginalized populations that Measure 110 was intended, right? The people that were most affected by the war on drugs, people of color, urban and low-income people that more heavily impacted by the previous systems that we had in place, right? And so some of those are popping up similarly to what they were before with the people that are at the table for these conversations. So we have a lot of concern, and it's just going to look like it's going to be chaos. There's just going to be so much chaos trying to get law enforcement on board to be able to transport people to where they can have services, trying to recognize that access to services is the key towards transforming lives as opposed to arrest or jail or detention. And there's not currently enough residential beds to support the idea that everybody has to go to treatment under a formal treatment setting, like a residential treatment center, although that's a benefit and it's one of the very important elements of what recovery can look like for people. But there's a lot of other services that are also supporting people in the change process and encouraging them and giving them the hope that they need to change their lives. So we just want to make sure that we keep the services moving forward and evolving and continuing to grow, because a lot of the services funded under Measure 110 have just barely gotten a chance to build their foundations and to establish their service channels and the things that we're doing. So just giving us more time to really establish and really have available the services that people need.
So House Bill 4002 that was passed in 2024 by Oregon legislature that recriminalized certain drugs here in Oregon, that went into effect September 1st. How did that affect the funding from Measure 110?
So House Bill 4002, part of what they did to keep the conversations going in legislation is at this point they have not touched the funding for our services through Measure 110. They did put out some money out of another fund to stand up the deflection programs, not very much, just a little bit, but it didn't affect access to services funds yet, right? I do think that when legislation comes into play in February or March, there's probably going to be more conversations, but that was part of the agreement made by legislators and by proponents of 4002, was we won't touch your services funds at this time, but we want to recrim, right? And so it went back and forth and there was a lot of different conversations, but for right now it's not interrupting the funding channels. We are in the middle of a new grant funding application that's going to go into effect in 2025. And so providers are just now doing their grant applications for that part of the process. And we're hoping to get that money committed and attached to whatever agencies are going to be using it before legislation hits next year so that we can get it secured and keep that help flowing.
Tammy, do you have any thoughts about how some of these counties are spending Measure 110 dollars or setting up deflection?
I think that a lot of the deflection process so far has been trying to use established routines or models or processes, because they're figuring it out from scratch has been difficult for them. But I do know that a lot of the deflection conversations are very heavy on the law enforcement side, making that they're drawing from a pool of people that have experience and knowledge that is in that kind of approach. So we just, as providers, continue to make our voices heard and try to make sure that people understand that that was a model that served its time in whatever process we had going on, but it didn't work then. It's not going to work now as far as actually serving the people that need help accessing services. So we just keep reminding them that we're here, we're now established, we're running. We really want to make these services available to people from a provider end, not from a law enforcement perspective.
And what would outreach to these people who need help, who need support in their addiction and their recovery, what would outreach look like? non-law enforcement outreach. What would that look like?
Well, the outreach is already happening. We go out to the homeless camps. We meet people in unstable housing or no housing. We have different programs that are set up with site-specific agencies to be able to deliver supplied peer delivered services. So a lot of the stuff is already happening. Harm reduction outreach, where life-saving Narcan and wound care supplies are taken to those people that need them the most. We allow them to bond and build relationship with the people that understand where they are, because we've been there and we're not anymore, and we have the opportunity, much like the Recovery Foundation of our event here at Hands Across the Bridge every year, where people come in and it's the lived experience. We've been there, we understand, we get it. There is still things you can do, and we want to help show you what those are, right? And so that outreach is already happening in many, many, many agencies across the metro area. So that's what it looks like for us, is outreach to the people that need it, where they are, and what we know we need to bring to help them. You know, so the interventions with the law enforcement are for many, many different reasons why they might be interacting with these folks in the community, and recognizing that they too play a part in supporting people and getting connected to the appropriate services rather than, and this is just my opinion, rather than just removing them from the community like they did myself, where I was just removed and I was out of sight, out of mind. But the help and or the growth that I needed to create a foundation in my recovery, these services have to happen in the community. They do not work effectively or long-term inside of a prison walls. That's where my addiction had to have the support that I needed from other people that had overcome their addiction and lived in recovery and were changing their lives. That was the most important part of what helped me in my own recovery, and that's what we want to continue to offer the people that are struggling with addiction and are searching for a connection that they can grab onto and change their lives as well. And the providers that are offering these services across the board, all kinds of different levels of care, have been given the opportunity to expand and establish programs throughout the Measure 110 process to be able to offer those services, because they were very siloed and oftentimes overwhelmed or difficult to access. And we have been able to create a much greater amount of access to services through this process. So as long as we continue to work together from all the agencies or from all the entities that are trying to do their part in this process that we have, law enforcement has an intervention that is related to what their agenda is or what their need to address is at the point. And so we just keep growing and we keep building on making these conversations happen, where they understand these are where the services are. You can bring them to us. You can offer them this. You can make this connection as well. And so we just continue to try to build up awareness and willingness from whomever is out there addressing this incredibly difficult and dangerous and deadly disease, especially around fentanyl. So there's just like so much going on. I think there's a lot of good work still happening though.
So House Bill 4002, which the Oregon legislature passed just this year, which created deflection, is going to also create a new misdemeanor.
Yeah, they're calling it Class EU, and I can't remember what the U stands for, but it is intended as a new class of misdemeanor. I'm not really sure what the point was, but it's got its own sentencing grid and guideline and the things that it has, but it also is supposed to be not retroactive, but they're supposed to be able to pull it back so that people can go through the deflection process and not end up with a criminal charge on their record if they participate in services, right? And that was the concept. I believe that was the intent of creating the new class misdemeanor. We'll see how that works. You know, I mean, I'm in some of the meetings with some of the counties. Each county has their own system being set up. They have their own, you know, leadership involved in creating the system and what that looks like. Some are different than others. Multnomah County in particular is setting up a center where they're going to bring people. Law enforcement is supposed to bring people, drop them off, and let them start the process of getting connected to services. Some of the other counties are taking them through a community court process where they get a charge and they're supposed to be able to have it rescinded after they complete or successfully engage in deflection resources. So every one of them is a little bit different, but I mean, it's good news is when we talk about recrim, that class of misdemeanor is not going to send them directly to prison. Do not pass go. Which is what happened in the war on drugs, right? People got a felony charge for possession, and now that is not the case. So I personally am glad they didn't try to go for that route again. Our prison systems do not have the capacity, as well as that is not how people grow and change and heal. So I'm glad that they at least made that an exception in the conversations around the recriminalization of personal use.
Now, you said every county is different and they all have different programs, and even getting law enforcement on board in different communities is going to be a task. So how is this going to be tracked? How are they going to measure the outcomes of whether or not deflection is working?
That is a very good question. I do not know that one off the top of my head. I'm not really sure how they're going to track who gets either the citation or the graduation from a deflection process, as opposed to deflection is not essentially a program. It seems to be more in theory a process. And so I think that each county will probably take time to figure out how they're going to track it on their own. If it's going to be a citation or if it would be, I haven't been at the tables where they're discussing on how that is going to be tracked or processed or recorded. There has been conversation around what is going to make people eligible for deflection, which has been disturbing and difficult at best, because what they're doing is they're taking, okay, if you have a simple Class EU misdemeanor possession charge, but that's all you have. You don't have like previous drug charges in the past 10 years, or you don't have any other charges with the Class EU citation. And so the criteria that's making people eligible for so-called deflection is very stringent. And for addicts and for people that are living in their addiction, most of the people have other stuff. It's not like it's like a perfect storm. People have other stuff. That's how we get there, and that's what affects what we're doing. So, you know, if they write all citations, those would be easy to track. But beyond that, I'm not really sure how they're going to show the impact or show how many people are served. And so at this point, I haven't been in those conversations.
And Tammy, what worked in your recovery? What worked for you?
Well, I was very much a part of the war on drugs. I went to prison multiple times. I spent a lot of years incarcerated around my addiction, mostly drug charges, some property crimes that went along with my drug use. And so what worked for me was not continuing to do my early clean time or my early recovery time in an insulated environment, which was prison or incarceration, right? Because then you would get out and you didn't have the community supports and you didn't have all the things you needed to start building a foundation, right? And so I would be incarcerated and then released, and then nothing on the outside had changed. So the changing part for me was when I did treatment in a strong recovery, community-based recovery network, downtown Portland. I lived in their housing. I did treatment with them. I grew up with other people in recovery, and I built community, right? And I needed connection to community. I filled the void of what was previously my community, which was the actively using addicts or people involved in criminal activity, and I needed to fill that void. And so that was what made the difference for me, was an extended period of time where I could make connections, build community, connect with people, and start my new life with a connection outside of myself. And that was 18 years ago. I am a person in long-term recovery, and what that means for me is it's been over 18 years now since I had a drug or alcohol, and my life has completely changed. Everything. I got an education, I got a career, I got a home, I got activities and connections to community, just like Hands Across the Bridge, where people are coming out and they're celebrating that everybody has hope. Life is worth living, and our communities are what matter. So that's what made a difference for me, and that's probably why I'm actually fairly pleased that they didn't try to return to a felony criminal charge for possession. At least it's now somewhat manageable on the misdemeanor level, and less chance that the folks will just spend years upon years, you know, away from the community for their addiction, and that's what was happening before.
Tammy, thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.